All right, that's it?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, to carry on with our EKG sessions of the year. So this one, I want to focus on wide complex tachycardias and to help with the recognition of those. Okay, so unfortunately I can't see in the dark, but any PGY3 is here. We need one. Okay, you're up. It's always you who starts, but... So this woman has chest pain, and it's obviously a wide complex tachycardia, and here's some beautiful rhythm strip. So what do you think?
Looks like it's very pretty regular.
Mm-hmm.
I go
on this tab. Mm-hmm.
That's not a good one. The last one wasn't a good one.
So we have a wide complex tachycardia with occasional narrower beats. How does this help us? Okay. Right, so that's it. So here's a wide complex tachycardia, and of course in almost all these situations we expect you to say VTAC to begin with and then think of other possibilities. So if we take VTAC as a putative rhythm, let's see whether we can support that or whether in fact it's something else. So the key thing I think we have to do here is to do as the French tell us to do with all these arrhythmias, right? And what do they say? Cherchez le P wave. So can we, everybody knows what the ventricle is doing. That's pretty obvious. Our job is to see what it, search for the P wave. What is the atrium doing? And how are they relating? That's our challenge. So, in fact, if we look this one over on these two rhythm strips, here's these 12-lead EKG. Here's a rhythm strip for V1. Here's a rhythm strip for 2. And here's a rhythm strip for V5. I think these rhythm strips really give it away. Because as we go, we can see that there's a P wave here, one here, one here. And we can take this interval, this P to P interval, and track that through as a caliper. So there's one in here, here. So it's here to here, 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 etc. So indeed, we can track the P waves heading all the way through. You can see how they march through. And they're out of sync with the QRSs, with the ventricle. So indeed, we have that famous evidence of AV dissociation. And when you have a wide complex tachycardia with AV dissociation, the chance of VTAC is 99% probably. And especially when we can see occasional captured beats. Because some of these P waves marching through here occur at such a time that they can conduct through. And when they conduct through, they get a narrow QRS. And others conduct through. Again, here's another one with a narrow QRS. So these are called captured beats. And they're kind of a sign that we have P waves which could conduct if we gave them a chance. It's just that most of the time we're not giving them a chance because the ventricle is already occupied with the ventricular extrasystoles, if you will. So we have a ventricular rhythm. An atrial rhythm marching through, evidence of AV dissociation with occasional captured beats. And sometimes you should be able to see fusion beats where there's a capture at the same time as the ventricle fires. But so this is classical VTAC. Classical VTAC. And it's a monomorphic ventricular tachycardia You can see the rate is 1.2. It's the rate's about 135 VTAC with AV dissociation. So this is the classical thing. And for this, I think we ought to recognize it as a medical emergency. This is the kind of thing we would start with lidocaine or amiodarone, unless the person has hemodynamic trouble, in which case we would shock them right off. So, but this is pretty classy. Next, please.
Would you shock them if he's hemodynamically stable?
Well, no, I would try... Back up, please. First time in it, but again, I think I would try amio or lido as a gentler approach to the person. But if it didn't, if he started to deteriorate at all, or if he didn't revert, let's say in a short time, half an hour or so, I would put him to sleep in cardiovert. If there's hemodynamic embarrassment or chest pain with it, then I would shock him right off. So it's a wide complex tachycardia with captured beats. Next one. Okay, what's happening here? So here we have a 12-lead EKG with some findings here and maybe different findings here, and you can see things happening here. So it's another wide complex tachycardia. Oh, here's a wide complex tachycardia. Here is not quite so wide. And we need a volunteer, please. Any other PGY3s? Is there one? Three, please. Somebody. Any other threes? No? Okay. You're pointing. You're up. So let's work on the rhythm strip. So what's happening here to here? What do you think?
Who are you looking at? Here you are. It looks like it's
and
it could be SVT. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's irregular.
No, it's perfect. I think it's perfectly regular over here. So what do these beats tell us? How do they help us? Because we're starting in sinus rhythm with a slightly wide QRS, probably an incomplete left bundle. And then we're changing to this. So what do these beats tell us, these ones? What do you think? Right. So what we have is some intermediate beats here. And these, in fact, are fusion beats. And fusion beats pretty much help us decide that these funny guys down here are coming from the ventricle. So here we have beats, each of which is preceded by a P wave. This is clearly sinus rhythm with some probably incomplete left bundle. And then here is a wide complex tachycardia, and is a supraventricular or ventricular. And I think these beats help us. These are called fusion beats. Notice that they're hybrids. They're intermediate in configuration between these sinus beats and these wide weirdo beats. And you can see it intermediate, kind of intermediate here and here. Now these are, notice that these guys, this one in particular, is exquisitely narrow. And I think that's related to the following phenomenon. These beats are an incomplete left bundle branch block. So it means the impulse is going down the right bundle. And these beats are right bundle branch block pattern, which means they're firing off from the left bundle. So if we have a beat that's firing from the right bundle and one that's going down the left bundle, firing from the left bundle, and going down the right bundle, then in fact, if they occur at the same time, they'll go down both bundles at the same time, and indeed we're going to end up with a narrow QRS. So people have written about this, that when in fact you have a beat involving both the right and left bundle occurring simultaneously, in fact, they can end up going down together and give us a narrow QRS. And that's what's happening here, in this particular narrow one. But most important, I just want you to realize that this beat, and this beat are intermediate between these wide upright ones and these wide downright ones. You know these are sinus, that's very obvious. So the fact that we're taking these steps into a wide complex tachycardia tells us that these are fusion phenomena. So the fusion, therefore, if we have a fusion phenomenon, it means we're conducting partially from the sinus, and we must be partially conducting from some other place, like the ventricle. So the fact that they can come together indeed proves that these other guys are from the ventricle, and indeed this is a ventricular tachycardia. So it's an unusual, it's an interesting EKG because it happened to have changed its what it's doing halfway through. You can see it's changing right here.
Dr. Cohn?
Yes?
Does the fact that the conduction changes the pattern, does it make you think of a balanced conduction and going towards the drumming or
out? Yes, it could be, but again, I think the fact that we have these fusion phenomenons tell us that they're really not conducting from the same place, that they're coming from different phenomenon, one is superimposing on the other one. I believe that's what it means. And also, these guys don't have P waves before them, whereas, and they're faster. These guys definitely have P waves before. So this is indeed a wide complex tachycardia with fusion beats. This is another example of VTAC. This one also is another example of VTAC. And one of these tests that I like to use to help me with that is to see if the P waves come in on time. So here we have beats, something going on with, here's three wide ones in a row, two in a row, some singlets over here. And the question is, are these supraventricular or ventricular? Now typically when beats are rising supraventricularly, they'll discharge the whole atrium, including the sinus node. So supraventricular beats often make the sinus node reset its cycle again. Whereas often, not always, but often, VPCs will not molest the atrium and won't reset the sinus node. And so we can use the timing to help us. And in fact, if we have calipers, you see that here to here, here to potentially in here, here to here is preserved. And that, in fact, we could track that timing out here to here and here to here, that we're preserving that P to P interval. So the fact that the P to P interval is not reset tells me that it's very likely that these funny-looking beats then are not coming from a supraventricular origin, but rather from a ventricular origin. Indeed, that they're three in a row, short bursts of VTAC. So I want you to note the preserved P2P interval. That helps you with the diagnosis here.
What
was Daniel? No, for this person, let me see. That really depends on the clinical setting. What does he have? Non-ischemic dilated cardiomyopathy. You know, it's so common to find non-sustained VPCs and non-sustained VTAC in these guys, that unless they're symptomatic from the VPCs or the VTAC, I wouldn't treat that directly. Except that with the low EF, this guy nowadays would get an ICD. So we ought to have an ICD, but whether we add amio to the program, it really depends on whether we're having long runs of VTAC, symptomatic VTAC, or any kind of VTAC that required cardioversion. If that was happening, I'd probably add amio. What does this basic EKG look like? So we have a Q wave here and here, and an F, and the precordial one. See, I always like to look at the narrow beats to see what they tell us. You know, not bad. They're pretty narrow. All we see are these Q waves here, but with upright T waves. But I think these probably had a prior inferior wall. It says non-ischemic, but maybe an inferior wall scar anyway. Anyway, we know that has a low EF. So this guy would end up with an ICD, but I don't think amio unless he has symptoms. Next. So here's a man, status post cardiac arrest, recently. And what can we squeeze out of this? So he has coronary disease, prior anterior wall MI. He's had a cardiac arrest and we've got him back. And we're faced with this wide complex tachycardia. Remember, that's the subject for today, wide complex tachys. So let's see. Any other PGY3s here? Please? Okay, you're up. That'll teach you.
Okay. So let's just start the whole routine. So the rhythm, there are PV.
Mm-hmm.
She is about, I'm going at 120.
Mm-hmm.
Axis is normal. She has intervals, or PR interval looks, this in the tachycardia, it should be, I think it's normal.
Mm-hmm.
And QRS is widened, and it's more than 3 little boxes, more than 0.12. We have a widened QRS, and QT is, it's hard to tell if it's a tachycardia, but it doesn't look roughly prolonged to me. It's like about half of the RR of the draw. And, she has maybe like T wave inversions laterally, which go with the tachycardia, I guess. And and because underlying is CAD prior anterior wall MI,
and what
is postpartum arrest. Yep. This was just like, he is told me this is just now, so it's postpartum arrest, the EKG.
And what is this pattern of wide QRS? And you're absolutely right. The key thing is you mentioned the PR interval. Indeed, there is a PR interval. We've got a P wave before each complex here. So here we have a P before each QRS. The QRS rate is about 125, as you say, and it seems to be perfectly regular. And there's at least one P wave before each complex, and with a constant PR interval. So in fact, the rhythm is probably sinus. And what else? What about the wide QRS? What's causing it? So we have a wide complex tachycardia, almost rabbit ears, not quite, on the left precordium and negatives in the right precordium, and this is typical what? Well, maybe electrolytes, but which pattern do we call this wide sinus with? That's right, left bundle branch block. So this person has sinus tachycardia with left bundle branch block, and that's a cause of confusion with VTAC. But in fact, it isn't VTAC. If we sure share the P waves, we can see there's a P wave before each QRS. Indeed, it's something supraventricular with a wide complex. This is the world famous sinus tach with left bundle branch block. Common cause of a wide complex tachycardia. Okay, next one, please. V- This one. Yes. So this 72-year-old woman has palpitations, a history of hypertrophic obstructive cardiomyopathy on sotalol and warfarin. And this person has this pattern. A definite wide complex tachycardia. VTAC or something else? Any other PGY3s here to pick on? Anyone else? Okay, how about twos? We need a two, please. You're up.
Okay. So, it looks regular tachycardia to me.
Well, think about...
I'm not sure.
Okay, it's a little hard to see.
It's not entirely regular.
That's right. Much of it appears regular, but in fact, if we were to really measure it out, you'd see that it's irregular.
So it's wide torus.
And irregular.
Wide torus. Again, I like bundle pattern.
Mm-hmm. See, wide complexes. Uprighted to the lateral leads, 1 AVL, T5 and V6.
It is difficult to tell the ST segment because of the left bundle pattern, but it looks like he was very inverted in some of the leads. So, it being irregular, I would probably call this AFib with a variant production.
Or left bundle branch block.
Left, yeah.
Correct. Excellent, and that's what this was. So here's an example then. Another cause of confusion with VTAC. It's a wide complex tachycardia, but it is irregular. Indeed, it's atrial fib in someone who has left bundle branch block. And you can see it's irregular. Now the problem is when AFib goes very rapidly, it tends to become more regularized in its response. But if you're patient and just look it over, you'll see there's times when it breaks down and becomes irregular. And furthermore, sometimes you'll have to give adenosine to see if we get some transient slowing to help us decide if they're supraventricular or not. But this one, I think we have hints of the irregularity. It's rapid atrial fib and left bundle branch block. Next.
I have a question. If you are resident on floor and you get this pattern, do you start on another one or start with adenosine?
Well, again...
No, I mean, you are not a cardiologist on floor, but just a resident.
Okay. I think if we recognize that it's rapid AFib, then we can approach that in our usual ways. If the blood pressure holds, we could give it either diltiazem IV or some beta blockers IV. And if the blood pressure is marginal, if the blood pressure is really low, we might have to cardiovert. Although that could be dicey because we don't know how long he's been in AFib and we may have some atrial clots around. Most of all, I think I would try to slow him with a beta blocker, dilt or digitalis, or triamiodarone. So it all depends on what his baseline blood pressure is, I think, to help us decide that. Yes. Okay. Again, what we're trying to do is Schur-Scheele P wave. That's this. The principle for today. So here we have this is from O'Keefe's book, a 53-year-old man with chest fluttering and dyspnea. And you can see what's going on here. So I need a PGY2 to try this one, please. Who?
Dr. Faiduk.
Anybody?
Dr. Faiduk,
you're up.
Let's see.
This guy's really humming. What's the rate?
$300,
right? He's really up there. And that, remember, is a magic number. That suggests what? It does suggest flutter, doesn't it? So here we have a rate of 300, and it seems perfectly regular until the end over here. And a rate of 300 and regular, it has to make us think of flutter and somehow with one-to-one conduction. Is that the case, or is it, some people might call this ventricular flutter, that is VTAC in an exceedingly high rate. So is it atrial flutter with one-to-one conduction, or is it a ventricular flutter? Well, it's hard to say. There could be P waves on that. At this rate, it's very hard to discern which wave is wave. However, if we're patient, and notice out here, notice that there's some change in the ventricular response. So out here, what do we see? Indeed, we can see, the, as you said, the flutter waves. So this now is atrial, this indeed is atrial flutter with a one-to-one response. And this person, right. So to have atrial flutter conduct, or any atrial supraventricular rhythm to conduct at a rate over 200, suggests what other process is going on? What other state or condition must we have to conduct at a rate well over 200? That's right. And there it is. Because, indeed, the AV node really can't conduct faster than 200 or 210. So when we see that there is a rhythm conducting at 1-to-1 at a rate over 200 or 210, we really have to think of an accessory pathway. And that's what this person had. So this person has an episode of atrial flutter and unfortunately has Wolff-Parkinson-White, has an accessory pathway and is able to conduct it at 1-to-1. So it's a very unusual tracing.
Does he have delta waves on
there? Well, you know, let's see.
It kind of looks like a couple of
weeks. Yeah, here... no, you know, out here where he's more narrow, I don't see delta waves. Right, I don't see them here. So he may be just preferentially coming down the normal conduction pathway, and he may even have a concealed accessory pathway, which chose to show up over here and then faded over here. Yes?
It looks to me that the complex is an effect for the one is...
Oh, yes, right.
When you have that seat, suggest it's coming from the ventricle to the pathway.
Right. That indeed, when we're conducting down, we may be conducting directly into the ventricle.
Antidromic
rather than orthodromic, right. Right. So that's probably what's going on. Well, no, that doesn't really hold here because usually antidromic or orthodromic has to do with the circus rhythm. Whereas this is probably not circus rhythm. This is flutter, then conducting down from there. It's not... the AV reentrant tachycardia. Yeah. Anyway, you're right. It's definitely... Right. They are different. In fact, they even change their nature over here a little bit. They are different, suggesting that we're going from atrium, accessory pathway, and firing into the ventricle rather than coming down the AV node, his bundle. Right. And the clue to this one, regular rapid rate of 300, that's a clue. And then luckily... on this EKG, things broke down, so we can see, indeed, the atrial flutter. Next one, please. So here's a person on Amio. With this pattern. Let me see. Yep. And again, we seem to have a P wave before each complex over here. At least one P wave, maybe more. So it's in this case, it's a right bundle branch pattern. Here we have a right bundle branch pattern. See, we have wide QRSs in the right precordium, and rabbit ear is over here in the right precordium. Here is sinus rhythm. It appears to be sinus, but then we have some pauses over here. And in fact, this is probably, and it's very regular over here. This one is probably flutter. This is probably flutter with a chiefly 2-to-1 response, and at times 3-1. So it's perfectly regular, wide complex, right, in this case, right bundle configuration. Perfectly regular, and except over here, becomes somewhat irregularly. And when it does, we still see some P waves there. And I believe, do believe, if we measure it out P to P to P to P to P to P, I think we'd find the P waves marching through. So at a rate that's twice this. So it would be P, 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 P. So indeed it's flutter with a 2-1 response and a wide complex, in this case a right bundle branch block. So another example of a supraventricular tachycardia. The what? Oh yes, and right, and left axis deviation. You know, but these are mostly Q waves, probably right bundle. I think right bundle and probably an antecedent inferior wall MI. Probably an antecedent inferior wall MI. And maybe superimposed on the left anterior hemi block. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good.
Can we make the diagnosis of right ventricular hypertrophy in the right bundle? Do we have criteria that are established?
Yes. Right. So with right bundle branch block, what I find useful is this. An R wave here that's maybe more than 11 or 12 in right bundle branch block. But also an axis that's right axis, vertical or right axis. That would be kind of critical. And remember, with right bundle branch block, if you're calculating the axis, you should just use the first 0.08 seconds of the QRS. Since right bundle branch block gives this late S wave heading off to the right that throws off the axis calculations. So what I like to do is take an index card or something. It's not going to work here, but I kind of block it off like this. That's better. And I just take the first 0.08 seconds of the QRS and use that to calculate the axis. So let me see. Is it RVH here? I don't think so, because if we do that, then the axis is not going to be vertical or rightward. So we have the height over here from the right bundle branch block. Negative forces out here, but when you have a left axis like this guy has, often V5 and V6 lose voltage as you get out there. Very often. Next one, please. Well, let's see this. Okay. Rheumatic heart disease, coronary disease, a prior PCI and aortic valve replacement. And here's another wide complex tachycardia. PGY2? Who? Okay.
You can't see this one.
No, it's no fair if you see it.
No, I can't see very well. Okay. So, I can't see any P waves. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It seems irregular, so I'm saying it's probably AFib. And then I think I'm seeing spikes before the QRS is the
good for you.
Speaker.
Good for you.
Yeah. Pacemaker, ventricular.
Mm-hmm.
Single chamber. It's left. Left bundle, which is consistent.
Right. Now, let's think about the chambers, though. I think you raise a very good point. First of all, right? In fact, it's a pacemaker rhythm. I remember the pacemaker tip is in the right ventricle down at the apex. So that's going to give us an axis that's a superior axis, since the impulse is heading from the apex north. And it's going to give a left bundle pattern, because we're going from right ventricle into left ventricle. So indeed, that's what we've got. And as she correctly pointed out, indeed, there is a spike before each QRS. So it is a pacemaker rhythm giving us a left bundle branch block pattern, giving us a wide complex rhythm. And whether it's, is it perfectly regular or irregular? And I think we can see some irregularities here. So if we had a VVI pacemaker that is in the ventricle, pacing the ventricle, sensing the ventricle, and inhibiting any time it sees a ventricular spike, we should have a perfectly regular ventricular response. And in fact, we're having some irregularities. So it may even be a DDD. We might have an atrial lead-in that's reading some P waves, and if it, or maybe even reading a prior T wave and firing down. It may be doing that. Because we have some irregularities.
It's not pacing
the atrium. I think it's reading something up above and then pacing the ventricle. Right. But anyway, the key thing is wide complex tachycardia with pacemaker spikes. That's the key thing here. Very good. Well, here's a train wreck. Here is a train wreck. And so a person with end-stage renal disease and hemodialysis, ischemic bowel, septic shock, hyperkalemia. Okay. Who else can we pick on? Okay. Yes?
I cannot see really like few ways. It looks like a sinusoidal wave in hyperkalemia.
Mm-hmm. So we do see that we clearly have a P wave before each. It's a wide complex tachycardia. First of all, let's agree with that. And we indeed have a P wave before each complex, at least one.
Mm-hmm.
PR is prolonged. QRS is wide. QRS is really wide. As well as showing what? Looks like some ST elevations out here. Maybe even a left bundle pattern. So it's a wide complex tachycardia, supraventricular in origin. And in this case, all this wideness is related to striking hyperkalemia. And remember, as potassium rises, remember the sequence of changes which occur. I mean, this is a very advanced state of hyperkalemia. But usually, as potassium rises, we first get, remember, peak T waves. Then several things happen. We widen the QRS a little bit and start to widen the PR interval. And then often we tend to flatten the P waves, although we don't do that here. But often the P waves get squashed and is referred to as, and they disappear. And it's a condition often referred to as atrial paralysis. So it looks like a junctional rhythm, but, which it may be or maybe not. But at any rate, but as potassium rises, you get peak T waves, widened QRS, prolonged PR interval, smaller P waves, even further widening of the QRS, which can look like right bundle, left bundle, or just nonspecific IVCD. And then further widening, VTAC, or even the famous sine wave, which is a disaster. So this is on its way to a hyperkalemic cardiac arrest, but it's not there yet. So here is another example then of wide complex tachycardia, in this case really related to hyperkalemia, and reversible with that with the treatment. Okay, I think we have a few more to see. Let's see. Oh, here's one. Oh, yes, good. Good. Any other PGY? Anyone else here? Any other victims? All right, let's start picking on them.
Yeah,
Okay. So we have this to start with, and then this. So things are changing halfway through.
Beginning, we have a normal sinus, cystic Brady.
Mm-hmm. Or is it? So here?
I do see peas tucked in there at the end.
Right.
Which makes me think.
And even down here.
And then it looks to me like it worked out really well.
Yeah.
Which makes me think this is an SBC.
Good for you.
Other than that, we obviously have some LDH. It looks like, can you measure LDH
with
the SBC here?
Well,
not really.
That's right, and these complexes are different than what there were over here. So what do you call this phenomenon then, where we change the nature of the QRS as the HR rate speeds up?
I have no
idea. Aberrancy. And this particular pattern is a rate-related intraventricular conduction defect, or a rate-related aberrancy or acceleration-dependent aberrancy. So here this person is probably a sick sinuser or sinus bradycardia pattern. So here's sinus bradycardia with a narrow QRS, and then he starts to have an atrial tachycardia here, and you can get a lot of P waves, at least one or maybe two for each complex. So a lot of P waves in here, and as we do that, we really change the nature of our complexes, and we demonstrate a rate-related left bundle branch block. Tachycardia-related left bundle branch block.
And remind me, the peaking of the P waves that you see in the beginning there, is it left or right atrial?
Usually right atrial artery. Well, no, there's an easy way to remember it, remember? Peaked. P waves suggest P pulmonale.
Okay.
Right? Peak P wave suggests P pulmonale. So.
So this is on. How do we know that this is not acute MI happening?
Oh. Okay. It could be.
Let
me see. We have T inversions here and here. Mm-hmm. It could be. You're referring to this part.
Yeah.
Well, I think if that's all we saw. Left bundle branch block can also fake us out that way and look like an acute MI. That's correct. I think if we probably took more EKG on this guy, we'd have other examples of the more narrow QRS coming through, and we could see what those complexes look like. But you're right. If we just had this left bundle pattern with its inherent ST elevation, if we had a story that goes with chest pain, we'd have to worry about acute anterior wall. That's true. In this case, I think it's just rhythm related. So it's called rate related intraventricular conduction defect, or rate related aberrant conduction, and probably a more accurate term is acceleration dependent aberrancy. Okay, next. Let me see. What did I want with this one? This one is... here we go. Right. Notice what's happening here, and then how it changes to here. So I said 200 equals to 200. Here you can see that the ventricular rate is 100. We have three boxes. One, two, three. The ventricular rate is 100. But as I think is apparent to you, there's two P waves for each QRS. So the atrial rate is 200. So here we have a ventricular rate of 100, except for this beat. And then suddenly we go into this thing with a rate of 200. And what we've done then is change our conduction ratio from 2 to 1 to 1 to 1. And with it, we've changed our QRS pattern to a wide complex. And indeed, this one looks like a ripe on a branch pattern during the tachycardia. In fact, it's even changing in front of our eyes. Because here he's in this, here it's, here he's in sinus rhythm with a narrow QRS. Then he starts conducting one-to-one with this funny-looking QRS and continues one-to-one, but loses the funny QRS and comes back to a pattern that looks like this guy again. So I think this is sinus, not sinus, this is probably atrial tachycardia. This is atrial tachycardia 2-to-1. Then atrial tachycardia 1-to-1 with aberrant conduction, and then continued 1-to-1 where the aberrancy is lost, and then back to 2-to-1 again. So aberrant conduction, funny, often subsides on its own. That here when we have atrial tachycardia coming through at 200, notice we get a wide complex tachycardia, and then it extinguishes itself when we go back to the narrow QRS response again. In terms of the lesson of the wide complex tachycardia, it's another example of a supraventricular tachycardia with rate-related aberrant conduction. So again, the key is finding associated P wave. Recognize that the P waves are a rate of 200 here, and indeed the same rate over here. Rate-related interventricular conduction defect. Okay, I think there's just a few more. Okay. Well, this is an example of a wide complex tachy. This is a famous variety. This poor soul had metastatic cancer, bone marrow transfusion, hypokalemia. You can see a very long QT interval, an R on T, and this is the famous torsade de pointe. Kind of up, down, up. Here we go. Up, down, kind of up. Oh, here's a nice example. So, and torsade de pointe is what? It looks like a slinky that's been twisted. Up here, kind of down here, up here. You can almost make out the sine waves of it. And you can see a sense of a prolonged QT. The first VPC is on it, and away we go. Now these, remember, tend to have that long, short cycle pattern. The presumption, I would presume that there was a pause before this normal beat. Pause, normal, prolonged QT, a VPC on it, and away we go. So the treatment here, of course here, is normalize the potassium. And if that doesn't work, our job is to shorten these pauses. So we had a case the other day, I'm in Weiler CCU this month. We had a case sent over from here of the person who had recurrent VTAC, had torsade, was treated first with magnesium and still had torsade, and then was given isopril, which seemed like a very gutsy thing to do, but it worked beautifully. Because here indeed, by giving isopril, what you do is speed up the inherent sinus rate. So the next sinus rate, instead of coming after this pause, would kind of shorten the pause. And if the pause is shorter, and you'll have a normal beat, then you're less apt to have re-entry tachycardias like torsade after it. So this is the famous torsade de pointe. If we talk about wide complex tachycardias, you have to know this one. Okay, let's see. That's it. So that was a series on wide complex tachycardias. So let's go all the way back to the very beginning of this series. Okay, this one. This one.
I'm sorry.
No, up to the top. Nope, up to the top. That's it. Okay, so to conclude, we've been talking about wide complex tachycardias. And I've tried to show you examples of all of these. First VTAC, then supraventricular tachycardias and intraventricular conduction defects, right bundles, left bundles, rate related. We had a Wolf Parkinson White tachycardia, pacemaker tachycardia, hyperkalemia, and torsade de pointe. So these are all some examples of wide complex tachycardias. Okay. Good. Enjoy it. Thank you.